This is the Sports Illustrated Boxing Podcast.
It's boxing.
A look inside boxing with Sports Illustrated's Chris Mannix. Interviews, analysis, and everything going on in boxing. And now a man who I wish was called the Boston Bleeder.
All doctors to the ER.
It's sort of like getting punched in the face.
Chris Mannix.
All right, welcome back to another episode of the SI Boxing Podcast, and we are posting this episode early in the week in deference to Thanksgiving and because it was a wild weekend in boxing. Yeah, Deontay Wilder defending his piece of the heavyweight championship again in spectacular style, scoring a seventh round knockout of Luis Ortiz, just showing once again he is one of, if not the most fearsome puncher in all of boxing. I recorded this episode from the press room at the MGM Grand with Dan Rafael, the senior boxing writer over at ESPN, and Keith Eidek, boxing writer at BoxingScene.com. We look back at everything we saw on fight night, and we look ahead to Tyson Fury, Deontay Wilder. We think that's going to happen in the first quarter of next year. How big a fight is that? Will the rematch go any differently than a really hotly contested close fight the first time around in December of 2018. So we talk all about that and much more. If you like this podcast, very easy way you can support it. Head over to Apple Podcasts, post a comment, leave a rating. It's simple, it's easy, it's free. It is the very best way to make sure that we keep doing this podcast week after week. That's it. All right, let's go. All right, joining me on the podcast, Dan Rafael, ESPN.com, Keith Eidek from Boxing Scene, and we are recording this from the press room at the MGM Grand after the Deontay Wilder knockout win over Luis Ortiz. All right, fellas, let's talk about this first. It was kind of this fight kind of encapsulated everything that Deontay Wilder is. He is a guy that can be outboxed, as he was for the first six-plus rounds against Luis Ortiz, and he's also a guy that possesses just the eraser of a right hand, which he landed and ended the fight with against Luis Ortiz. What did you think of his performance, Dan?
I thought it was sort of what most people expected. You spent the entire fight just waiting for Ortiz or for Wilder to just land one shot and do some damage. Ortiz landed a great shot in the first fight, almost knocked him out, you know, put some punches together, couldn't quite get him out of there. And then Ortiz, kind of let it get away from him at that moment. And Wilder came back and stopped him with one shot. And in this fight, you could just see Wilder, he was, you know, trying to feel him out and trying to find the space and find the distance, but you knew he just stood there with the right hand locked and loaded, ready to just let it roll whenever he could find an opening. And, you know, I felt like all of us on press row, looking around the crowd, everybody was basically just waiting, thinking he's going to land the right hand. It's just at what point? And he, you know, when Deontay says at the press conference stuff like, don't look at your cell phone, don't go to the bathroom, don't get a snack, don't take a leak, whatever, because it could be at any moment in time, because at the moment when he scored the knockout, nothing much was going on. It was same as most of the other rounds. It was, you know, a lot of inactivity, mostly from Wilder, and all of a sudden, boom, right hand, and, you know, he's out. And, you know, I asked Luis Ortiz at the post-fight press conference, you know, if he saw the right hand, and he said, no, he didn't see it, and if he had seen it, we'd still be fighting, and that's what he can do. He just needs, as Deontay has said also, he needs 1 second, and he can end any fight, period, against Luis Ortiz or any heavyweight today, maybe any heavyweight ever.
Keith, how did you feel sitting there ringside? Did you feel the same way that, you know, Wilder's down, but he's still very much in this fight, or was there any kind of different feeling seeing the way Ortiz kind of dominated the first five rounds, you know, winning at least five of those rounds, maybe all, you know, six on ringside media scorecards. Did you feel that there was legitimate danger for Wilder in this fight?
Well, he was clearly getting to the point where he had to get a knockout to win. He was a round or two away. He's losing every round, so he would have had to have knocked him out to win the fight, assuming the judging was the way that it turned out to be. You know, they had it 59-55 on two scorecards and 58-56 on the other. So they had scored four of the six. One judge scored four of the six rounds for Ortiz. Two judges scored five of the six rounds for Ortiz, which was, I thought, fair. I thought he won five of the first six rounds. But you know that Deontay Wilder is never out of the fight. And the amazing thing about him is how poised he is and how patient he is. He didn't look bothered by this at all. He had to know that he was down on the cards, and he didn't seem at any point like he was concerned that he wouldn't land that right hand that would change the entire fight, and obviously that's what he did in the seventh round. And kind of fitting that it was in the seventh round, the round in which he almost got knocked out in the first fight, and he comes back toward the end of that round, the final minute of that round, and knocks out Luis Ortiz.
Was this more impressive to you than his first win? It did take him 10 rounds, but he's proven to be really good in rematches. I mean, against Bermain Stiverne, he comes out, knocks him out early in that one. This one, he finishes it early. Was this a more impressive win to you?
I don't think it was more impressive because he lost five of the first six rounds. I mean, it was obviously an incredible ending, a memorable ending that's going to go viral and has gone viral already, of course. But I think his performance in the first fight was more complete. You know, he knocked him down in the fifth round of that fight, and he had lost rounds in that fight, obviously, especially going up to the fifth round. He was losing the fight going into the fifth round also, but knocks him down. What I was more impressed by in the first fight is that he withstood what happened in the seventh round, because I think that was the defining moment of Deontay Wilder's career. In the final 40 seconds of that round, he took some huge shots from Luis Ortiz after he was already hurt. And he made it to the end of the round, and then he came back, he got his second wind in the eighth and ninth rounds, and then finished him in the tenth. So overall, I was more impressed with the first performance, more so than this one.
Yeah, and getting a guy the first time, I think, is a little more difficult than getting him the second time, more impressive. Ortiz was undefeated at the first time and kind of the boogeyman of the division. Dan, when you look at Wilder is up there with, speaking to us afterwards, and he badly wants recognition as an elite fighter, as, you know, one of the big stars of his generation. Does he deserve that type of recognition?
I think so. When you're the heavyweight champion or a heavyweight champion and you're undefeated and, you know, you're a Southern, homegrown guy with a great record and great charisma and a gift to talk to the fans and to the press, and you score knockouts like that, you know, he should be a bigger star in my mind. I'm not really sure why not at this point.
Well, isn't it easy, though? Like, the easy answer is he hasn't fought anybody. Like, his two best wins are against the same guy. Like, I think that's the easy answer.
No, but I don't agree with that, because when Mike Tyson was making a name for himself, he didn't fight good guys either. Same kind of caliber type opponents, just the best guys of his time.
Mike Tyson fought better guys, though.
His Spinks. Spinks was a petrified light heavyweight who had barely eked out a controversial
Larry Holmes.
Against Larry Holmes. Larry had come out of a long retirement and got destroyed at an old age. Again, I'm not trying to nitpick and knock out or knock Mike Tyson for what he did. My point is, Mike electrified the world with his big knockouts, whether he was fighting a superstar opponent or not, and he never really beat a superstar opponent. Deontay Wilder is scoring, in some ways, more devastating knockouts than Tyson against a generally, you know, relatively speaking, the same kind of opposition. Now, he may not have the name of a great Hall of Famer like Larry Holmes on his record, but Larry was, way past his prime at that point. Spinks, was, crossing himself going into the ring. That was over and out in 91 seconds. So, again,
Trevor Berbick, that was fun.
I actually just watched that the other night on YouTube because it was the anniversary, 33 years or whatever, and spectacular. You know, he scored like four knockouts in one shot because he kept falling down. But the thing about it is, Wilder is scoring those type of, like, oh my God, knockouts. And I'm just not sure if as many people are seeing it or they don't care or what. I mean, look, there was a lightly attended fight here in the MGM Grand Garden Arena. They gave away gazillions of tickets for this fight. They still could barely get 10,000 in the arena. For a fight that, on paper was an interesting rematch, but I think that people were like, I don't want to see that fight. I want to see the rematch with Tyson Fury. So, Deontay has the capability to still become a very big star. I think after the promotion for Wilder Fury 2, which is going to have the muscle of ESPN and Fox behind it, plus, again, another knockout that a lot of people are going to see on social media and, clips of, and the way that those two are going to talk about things leading up to the fight and the promotion is going to get from the two networks, combined with the highlights they can show from their first fight with him scoring two knockdowns and, Tyson Fury doing what he did, the way he was able to box and move and maybe singing at the press conference. That's going to be a gargantuan pay-per-view. And he goes into that kind of fight at that level and he scores a knockout against Fury, keeps him down this time. I think that will finally put Wilder into the mainstream of sports.
Is he the biggest puncher in boxing history? That came up a lot at the press conference.
I don't know if I could say the biggest puncher in boxing history, because that's a mighty big thing. But he's up there in that conversation. I don't care what anybody says. I've been watching Deontay Wilder. I was at his professional debut. I've been at most, all but maybe one or two of his title fights. I've seen many, many, many Deontay Wilder fights. He is an absolutely devastating puncher. Even tonight's knockout against Ortiz, that right hand, it was not his best right hand. He didn't get him with a full leverage clean shot. He got him with a great shot and it scored a great knockout. But, you know, when he imagine that, and he can even be more powerful with the shot. He is an absolutely devastating puncher. I mean, as good or better than Tyson, George Foreman. You know, somebody mentioned to me Ernie Shavers, who never won a world title but was known as a massive, massive heavyweight puncher. You know, I don't care who anybody wants to say, he's in the conversation for sure.
Keith, let's spin it forward a little bit, because now we are barreling towards Fury, the rematch, tentatively penciled in for mid-February. You know, they put this off. They waited for a year, and I think they'll gain something for doing that. The original rematch was scheduled to be on Showtime. Now, as Dan pointed out, the muscle of ESPN and Fox will be behind it. But do you think either one of these guys changed at all in the last year? They both took two fights. They both won two fights. You know, the first one for both was relatively easy. The second one, for different reasons, had its challenges with Otto Vailen and Fury, and, of course, with Ortiz leading in the early rounds. But did it change at all, or do you go into the rematch thinking the exact same thing as you would have if it happened in May of this year?
Well, I don't know that they've necessarily changed stylistically. I don't think there's anything much that has changed about them in that way. But Deontay Wilder has more of an aura about him now than he had going into their first fight, because now he's just destroying people with one, he was destroying people before, but what he did to Dominic Brazil and knocking him out in the first round, and what he did tonight against Luis Ortiz, who was winning the fight comfortably before he landed that punch, I think has taken him to another level in terms of, like, we're having this conversation whether he's the best puncher, the hardest puncher in the history of the sport. That's a very subjective thing. I mean, how could any of us truthfully or accurately answer that? I don't know. But he's certainly in that conversation with the type of people Dan mentioned, Mike Tyson, Ernie Shavers, Sonny Liston, you know, people of that ilk. I mean, he's in that conversation for sure. But I do think it is strange, though, just going back to what Dan was talking about before and what you had asked him, that he hasn't caught on more. I don't quite understand it. He's a very likable person. He has the gift of gab like maybe no other person other than Tyson Fury in this sport. He's personable. Like, he's a likable guy, and he's doing what every boxing fan wants to see. Even the purists who love boxing, the sweet science, like to see people get knocked out. He's not just knocking people out. He's knocking people unconscious. It's ridiculous what he's doing to people. And he's still, like Dan said, I mean, you know, there probably were 10,000 people in the building tonight. How many of those people actually paid? You know, we won't find out until we get the ticket report.
Isn't the easy answer to your question, though, or to this point, to bring it back to what I said earlier, the fact that he hasn't fought those top guys? I mean, Tyson was a phenomenon, though. Like, Tyson, we knew from like 15 years old. Like, you knew who Mike Tyson was coming up the ranks. Whereas Wilder kind of came out of nowhere in a way. I mean, like, he went to the Olympics and then...
It's almost unfair, in my opinion, to compare Wilder to Tyson in the sense that I think Mike Tyson was a phenomenon unlike anything we've ever seen in this country, certainly in boxing. You know, obviously there were other very popular fighters, but in that four-year period before when he was coming up and he was fighting on TV and knocking people, you know, unconscious, he was a phenomenon for 4 years, unlike anything we've ever seen. And he was this polarizing guy who was doing all these crazy things out of the ring, and he was married to this famous actress. Deontay Wilder knocks people out, and he goes away for a couple of months, and he raises his 8 kids and does whatever he's doing. You don't hear any nonsense from him or anything, so he's not going to be Mike Tyson. You know, there's never going to be another Mike Tyson. So I don't think that that's fair. Not that you're doing it, but I just don't think it's fair to think he's ever going to get in that stratosphere, because he won't.
Yeah, Dan, what do you think? You were looking to weigh in on that.
I was saying when you were talking about comparing him with Tyson, or that Deontay was kind of came out of nowhere, he really didn't come out of nowhere, because a lot of those early fights were on television and prospect fights. He was an Olympic medal winner, undefeated. You know, Tyson wasn't in the Olympics. He was a good amateur but never got to the Olympics. And Wilder, at a time when there was really not a lot of top heavyweight prospects, he was the guy that people looked at. Now, he was a raw project, and it took him a long time because his amateur career was actually fairly brief. But there was a time when he was a young fighter, and, you know, maybe not every boxing fan knows this, but I know I wrote about it and people talked about it. where he went and you know, was handpicked by Vladimir Klitschko when Vladimir Klitschko was heavyweight champion to bring him to his training camp to give him work. And he raved about it. And Deontay spoke at the press conference today, tonight after his fight, about things that Emmanuel Stewart, Klitschko's trainer, had told him about, that even when he, you know, when he's fighting lesser guys, he's going to knock them out. But when he starts to step up and fight better contenders and other top fighters, that he's going to still knock them out. So I don't think Wilder came out of nowhere at all. I think that, you know, he was, in my mind, at least early on, before he was the champion, very underpromoted. It's gotten better, obviously, now. You know, he's appearing on the Fox shows, on some of their football telecasts, and, you know, Showtime certainly did a heck of a job with him when they worked with him, certainly on the Fury first fight with their tour they did. You know, the thing is, he's 34 years old now. He's not, when Tyson was coming in, it was 19, 20, 21 when he was champion. You know, he's a late bloomer, let's say. Mm-hmm. But I still think, I agree with Keith, he's never going to be another Tyson, because that was, you know, in a you know, just once in a lifetime kind of situation. But I do think Wilder, as a late bloomer, with a win against Fury and another kind of knockout like this, he's got a chance to really make that giant leap.
I agree with you. My point was just
He's fighting all the top guys that they'll make available to
him. Well, there's the operative kind of phrase.
Well, hasn't he fought besides Joshua?
Well, I mean, that's like saying, like, you know, what other country? I don't even know how to make the.
Look, he signed
too tired
a contract to
compare.
Go to Russia to fight Povetkin.
I agree. That was. I'm just saying, like, I think the reason he hasn't caught on at a higher level is that, because outside of Ortiz, on his resume, I don't think there's anybody better than a C-plus type opponent.
What about Fury?
To his beat, I'm saying, who is with a win on his resume. I think that's a primary reason. Which brings me to my point that I think 2020 could be a massive year for him. Like, 2020 could be the year that Deontay Wilder catches on. If he goes out in February, all that promotional muscle behind it, and he stops Tyson Fury, and then, let's say, for example, Andy Ruiz wins the rematch against Joshua, he gets a piece of him. Whatever it's for, I don't think it'll be for Undisputed, because the belts will be wind up fractured. But that's the big,
and
big
also
fight.
Also, remember, they have, you know, this is sort of like in the small print. The agreement that they made with Tyson Fury for the rematch is actually a two-fight deal, which will give them a trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
That's, you know, whatever happens in the fight on February 22nd, theoretically, there's going to be a third fight. Now, whether it's the next fight immediately or it's one fight after that, you know, that's still a little murky. But there's a two-fight deal. So the plan is that they'll fight at least twice more.
Yeah, and look, that would be great. And Keith, do you agree with the idea that 2020 could be the year that he catches on? If he gets, like, I don't think he fights Fury twice in 2020 and Ruiz in that mix, but even if he gets two of those three fights, that's you know, kind of catch-on type of stuff. That's where you stick, I think.
Yeah, and I do think to a certain degree, Chris, no matter what he does, he's not going to get credit, the full amount of credit that he probably deserves. Like, if he beats Tyson Fury twice, say they fight two more times and he beats him twice, they're going to say, oh, well, this is a guy who he didn't look too great against Otto Vailin, and, you know, maybe Tyson Fury's not as good as we thought.
Do you think people would say that?
The nature of people, yeah, particularly
boxing
fans,
people,
1,000%,
yes.
I think, okay, they would say that.
I wouldn't say that. I still think Tyson, yeah, Tyson might have mailed it in against Vailin.
I'm not saying that a lot of people won't give him credit, but I think there'll be enough naysayers where he won't get the amount of credit that he probably is due after beating the guy who's considered the lineal heavyweight champion, whether you believe in that or not. He still will have beaten him twice if he does do that. Now, that's a tall order, because, in my opinion, Tyson Fury won that fight. You know, they won their fight back in December. So and he's clearly capable of outboxing him again. And if he doesn't get clipped, I mean, he could win their February fight or whenever that fight happens. But just say, for argument's sake, though, say he beats Tyson Fury twice, and then who knows what's going to happen in this Ruiz-Joshua rematch. But say Ruiz wins again, and he winds up fighting Ruiz, and then he beats Ruiz. They're going to say, oh, well, this is a guy who lost to Joseph Parker, right? And then if Ruiz beats Joshua twice and then he goes and fights Joshua at some point and knocks him out, well, he'll have already lost to Ruiz twice.
Mm-hmm.
So he's almost in a situation where, well, what else is he supposed to do?
Daniel Dubois. Let's just bring on 2 years from now. It's Daniel Dubois. I get your point that,
yeah,
there's always...
Just, no matter what he does at a certain point, people,
yeah,
are just going to say, oh, well, he didn't beat this guy, and he didn't do this, and he didn't do that, and that...
At least he has the chance in 2020 to kind of up that resume, and
he
certainly
does,
with,
yeah,
all the promotional vehicles behind it. Let me ask you, Keith, about is if Joshua comes out and emphatically avenges that loss, mm-hmm, if he knocks out Andy Ruiz in Saudi Arabia, does it all come back? Like, do we start clamoring once again for Joshua versus, and if Wilder wins, Joshua versus Wilder? Is everything that happened in the last 6 months, does it all kind of wash away?
I don't think it goes away entirely, but I think you do get the momentum back for that fight, and people will want to see it, you know? Especially if he beats, as you mentioned, Chris, if Joshua beats Ruiz emphatically, and there's no question about that, they don't need to have a third fight or anything like that.
If Joshua beats Ruiz, they will lose Andy Ruiz's number. Like, they will not,
right, of course.
They will,
yeah, of
not
course,
fight Andy Ruiz a third time.
Of course. But I think, you know, that there will be momentum for that fight to happen again. Now, I think, unfortunately, we go back, even though they should have learned their lesson based on what happened June 1st at Madison Square Garden, it'll still go, well, it should be 50-50 or should it be 60. We're going to get into the same cycle of nonsense that we lived through for 2 years, probably longer than that. And it'll be a difficult fight to make again.
Yeah, if not impossible. Dan, what do you think? Does it all come back if Joshua knocks out Andy Ruiz, do we get that same kind of buzz?
It never all comes back. You know, and what irritated me when Joshua lost, because they blew making the fight when it was available to do so with no real issues as far as, you know, TV and the money was right for everybody. They just, you know, they screwed it up and they didn't do it. It will never be what it should have been, which was two undefeated champions for the undisputed title. So, yes, maybe Joshua beats Ruiz and gets back some of the belts and they make a big fight. Yeah, of course, it'll be a big pay-per-view and a big event. And, you know, I'll be excited about it. But you know what? It will never be what it was supposed to be. Two top guys undefeated at the summit for the undisputed title. You know, and like you said, whatever happens in the Ruiz fight, eventually you just know, because of boxing, you know, we can't have nice things. The belts will become fractured and there won't be an undisputed title. You know, they may fight each other, and that'll be good, but it won't be what it should have been. And that pisses me off, and it will for the rest of my life.
Yes, I was already sitting there writing, as Ortiz is winning, I'm sketching out, like, the blame game. It's Eddie Hearn's fault. It's Al Heyman's fault. Let's just blame Aram, too. It's somebody's fault.
I just figured, I was sort of thinking that, too, but in my mind, I'm like, you know, I'm thinking that, but he's going to get him with the right hand at some point.
Yeah.
He did.
It's just still there.
All right,
before
it's like you can't even like, – you. We all gathered here in the Grand Garden Arena knowing we're here to see something for a split second, which is him land a right hand and let's go home. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. And rarely do you have a fight that goes more to plan or to the conventional wisdom than what happened in this fight, where – you know, I kind of figured Ortiz, you know, he could maybe have got the knockout also, but that he was going to probably win some rounds if he boxes similar to what happened in the first fight, and eventually Wilder's just going to annihilate him, and that's what happened.
I find myself fact-checking Wilder sometimes, like I fact-checked Floyd back in the day. It's like when he's like, nobody wanted to fight Luis Ortiz. Well, the reason you're fighting him is because he was offered $7 million to fight Anthony Joshua in June, and... you know,
they had to match the deal.
He can't make a Joshua deal. Well, you were offered $100 million. That's not nothing to make a deal. It's not that he's well within his rights. And look, Floyd set the blueprint for
but
waiting.
There really wasn't. There really was no other top contender that
no.
was that interested to fight Andy, to fight.
Especially
Luis
not the
Ortiz.
First time. Especially not the first time. The first time, absolutely. I think the second time it was more.
But even still, I mean, first of all, the pool of quote unquote top guys is pretty limited.
Sure.
Number one, but I never heard Joshua asked for him. I never heard Andy Ruiz ask for him. I never heard Dillian White ask for him. You never heard, you know, pick a top heavyweight.
Not a year ago, no.
I never heard, you know, I didn't hear Alexander Usyk say, I'm coming to heavyweight, give me Luis Ortiz. I mean, their guys were just not asking for that smoke, so to speak.
Mm.
And to Wilder's credit, you know, and I think people should give him credit for this. I know his first, you know, 35 fights or whatever were against nobodies or whatever it was, but since he won the belt against Stavern, he's fought pretty solid opposition relative to what's available in the division. Guys who fought for titles, you know, guys who are Olympians, guys who are undefeated, guys who are his mandatories, you know, voluntarily against Tyson Fury, voluntarily against Ortiz twice, and on top of that had signed to go to Russia to fight Alexander Povetkin, who was highly regarded.
Mm-hmm.
And not his fault. He was in England training the last couple of weeks before the fight, 10 days before. Povetkin pops for a banned substance, who's now failed tests twice. And by the way, Luis Ortiz, who we fought tonight, he also failed two drug tests, and Wilder still fought him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been going through VADA testing for years. So, you know, the narrative that Deontay is not looking to fight top guys or to get away from it is absolutely nonsense.
No, he's definitely looking. It's just unfortunate that, you know, up until this point, we haven't had as many top guys as I think.
Leave him alone.
Huh? Huh?
Leave him alone.
I love Deontay Wilder. Like, watching stuff like that is worth five rounds, six rounds of, you know, mundane stuff to see that brilliant. It's bringing it back to Tyson. It is like watching Tyson in those moments. The power that you see and just that, it just goes away. Before I let you guys go, Keith, let me start with you on just one of the undercard fights. Leo Santa Cruz beats Miguel Flores, wins some version of the WBA's bullshit championship. Not the best Leo Santa Cruz we saw there. And I'm starting to wonder if at 31, his best days are well behind him here. Now, he still wants the big fights. He wants Gary Russell. He wants Gervonta Davis. But I don't think we'll see the Leo Santa Cruz versus Frampton, the Leo Santa Cruz versus Mars the first time. That guy might be gone, at least in my mind. What was your takeaway from watching Leo at 130?
Well, he did say after the fight that he had some sort of virus that he caught. Maybe, I guess it was 2 weeks before the fight. He said it was a week before he came to Las Vegas. He got some treatment for that. And he said it did affect his training, and he didn't really quite feel himself when he came to Las Vegas. He still won the fight pretty convincingly, I thought. It was not clearly not his best performance by any stretch. In his first fight at 130 pounds, you were looking for him to be more impressive, particularly against a guy who, you know, some of these internet sports books had Leo Santa Cruz listed as a 100-to-1 favorite.
Yeah, MGM at 40-to-1 coming
right
into it.
It's yeah, so and that's big number. Know, probably when people were betting on floor, you know, whatever. But, you know, so we're expecting more out of Leo Santa Cruz tonight, I think. And, you know, I don't know at this point. He's 31 years old. He's had some difficult fights, but I don't know that he's finished at the top level. But I don't think, based on what I've seen from him in the recent past, that this is a guy who can beat Gervonta Davis or Gary Russell Jr. I think those are both fights that he would lose. I would like to see him take those fights because there's been a lot of chatter about, particularly about the Gary Russell Jr. fight, for a very long time. So if Russell were willing to move up to 130 now and make that fight finally happen, it would be good to see it because, you know, Russell's having trouble getting big fights for whomever you want to blame for that. But I don't think that he should fight Gervonta Davis, to be honest with you. And it's the fight that he has been talking about repeatedly for months, and he seems to want this fight and seems to think it's a makeable fight. And maybe if Gervonta Davis is not going to, you know, cross the street, so to speak, to fight guys that we would want to see him fight at 135, maybe that fight does happen. And he thinks Gervonta Davis could come back from 35 to 30. Davis told us a few weeks ago when we were interviewing him here about his fight about against Uriarkis Gamboa that he thinks that he can still make 130 and he would be willing to do that for the right fights. I don't think that's a fight Leo Santa Cruz can win. I think he would get knocked out in that fight, probably violently, but I would commend him for taking the fight.
Dan, what did you think of Santa Cruz's performance? And I'm with Keith 100% that stay far away from Davis. But Russell, I think Russell boxes circles around him personally, but I think that's a more winnable fight for Santa Cruz.
Oh, it's a more winnable fight, but I was very disappointed. And I mean, you know, look, Leo's always been a good guy and everything. If he says he was sick, I'll take him at his word. But it was hard to watch that fight. It was horrible. You know, we were coming up with nicknames. You know, my colleague Steve Kim referred to him as Leo Santa, Snooze. And I said, yeah, he's fighting Miguel Borges. You know, it was a bad fight. But again, he won probably, I think I had it like 10-2 or something like that. The judges had it a little closer, but you know, he won handily. And if it wasn't his best night, you know, okay, that happens. You know, you win tonight, you look good the next time. But you know, I think he's stagnating a little bit because he does need a big fight. He needs to have something. How do you get up in camp to go do the hard work when the opponent, you know, these are not robots. They hear, they see. You know, he knows he's fighting a guy that's supposed to be like 100-to-1. That it's got to be difficult to get up for on a consistent basis. So I do commend Leo for wanting to fight these names. But he's also been saying that for a while. They've been talking about the Russell fight for like a year and a half, probably longer than that. I don't know whose fault it is. I just know that, you know, Leo hasn't fought anybody that's been that good for a while. The second Morris fight was completely unnecessary. Gary Russell hasn't fought anybody since he got beat, you know, badly by decision by Lomachenko. He won the title against a great name in Johnny Gonzalez, but who was well past his best days. And since then, he's been a once-a-year fighter. It's like Groundhog's Day. Come out around May, you know, pick up $1 million check and beat a guy that nobody cares about. And then go away and, you know, come back, you know, for the next payday. So, but I would like to see that fight, you know, even if it was at, whether it's at, you know, Gary has said that he'll come up to 130, you know, make the fight. I mean, they're both with Al. He can put them on whichever network, whether it's Showtime or Fox, that he desires. The money is there to make the match. You know, let's get it on. I agree with Keith, though. Gervonta, that's probably not a good fight. for Leo. And frankly, there's not as much public interest, I don't think, in that fight. I think if you ask the real boxing fan which they'd rather see, they'd much rather see Gary Russell for a couple reasons. It's a fight that's been talked about for a while, and it's also probably in most people's minds more competitive.
Yeah, and Keith, I'm with Dan. Like, they're on the same side of the street, man. Like, just like, what are we doing here? Like, yeah, just let's make that happen.
It's sort of perplexing that those fights haven't happened yet, for particularly the Russell Santa Cruz fight hasn't happened yet. But if we're talking about fights that we want to see, and we're talking about these three guys, the fight I actually want to see is Gervonta Davis to move back to 130 pounds, Gary Russell to move up to 130 pounds, and they fight each other. That's a fight I want to see, because I don't think Santa Cruz will win either fight. But if Gary Russell, while he still has something left of his physical prime, wants to fight Gervonta Davis, and Gervonta Davis wants to fight him, and they can make that, I don't know where they would put it, because some of the decisions they make in putting these fights in certain venues make no sense to me. But if they put that fight in the Baltimore, D.C. area, and I don't mean to get Dan all excited, but if they put that fight there, that would be a huge fight in Baltimore or D.C., wherever you want to put it, and it would be an excellent fight, I think. You know, I'd favor Gervonta Davis because he's a stronger fighter, the younger fighter at this point. But Gary Russell's a great boxer. He's really
great
smart.
Great speed. Yeah,
tremendous speed still. I think he's 31 now, 30, 31 years old. I would love to see that fight, and I really hope they make it.
Yeah, well, we don't always get what we want in boxing.
By the way, it would sell out at the Cap One Center in D.C.
Yeah, I agree.
No doubt about it, because Gervonta, it may be, you know, from Baltimore, it's an hour away.
Javante's become a big star, man. Like, going to the Ravens game and getting, like, recognized.
And Gary,
like, that's
Gary
legit.
May not be a superstar anywhere else, but the D.C. folks know him. They've been reading about him, you know, in the news, or seeing him on television, or hearing about him since when he was going to the Olympics, going back to 2008, I believe it was, or 2004, whenever he was in the Olympics. But, so he's been a local sports name for a long time. There was, you know, I lived in D.C. for almost 20 years, and, you know, when he was coming up as a young pro, and his brothers, they've been featured in the local press and on television consistently for years, maybe even more so then than now, because he doesn't fight very often. But Davison, I agree with Keith. I wouldn't mind seeing the Santa Cruz fight. I want to see that fight, but Russell and Davis is a big-time fight. It would do really well.
Then I look forward to seeing it next year in Ontario or at the StubHub Center in Southern California. Then.
Yeah, on July 4th weekend.
That's a lock. Dan Rayfield, ESPN, Keith Idek over at Boxing Scene. Fellas, thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much.